Hello, and welcome to the Lives of Women in History. My name is April Rogers.
The Donner and the Reed parties turned back to Truckee Lake. Now, the lake was pretty, but not to their eyes. All they saw was a reflection of the mountain that they couldn't cross. All they saw were snow-covered peaks that kept them hostage, and the blue sky that often would turn dark with more storms. They were trapped in the mountains, left there to endure sub-zero temperatures at night, and they had to face the likelihood of starving or freezing to death. That knowledge must have stirred the deepest terror. But the immigrants didn't sit and cry. They began building homes for the winter. After all, they had a chance. James Reed's rescue party was still on the way. Now, today, people actually frequently ask why the Donner Party didn't just turn back to the warmer area of Truckee Meadow. It was 50 miles east. They couldn't turn back for the same reason that they weren't able to go forward. There was too much snow. The Breens had the first claim on the cabin that already stood there. It was about 16 feet by 20 feet. It had a fireplace and a chimney, and the walls were oxhide and pine brush. The floor was dirt. The only things inside the cabin were books. These are books that had been left there probably by the immigrants who had built the cabin a year or two before. They found a Bible, a volume of William Shakespeare. They found the life of Daniel Boone and several other books, but there were no windows. Of course, there wasn't any glass. The Kesburgs created a lean-to or a three-walled shack against one end of the Bryn cabin. The others built from scratch. They'd cut trees for two log cabins, and they quite deliberately built their cabins a fair distance apart. It was actually about a good half-mile walk between the furthest cabins. The Reeds and their hired hands, along with Stanton and the Native Americans, shared half of one new cabin. The Graves family, with their seven children, lived in the other half. A wall separated the two halves, and each side had its own door, so the occupants did not have to cross paths. Now, this was a blessing for Margaret, because the Reed and Graves family were not on the friendliest of terms. The other new cabin was erected against a large granite rock. The rock acted as a wall and a chimney for a row of fireplaces. The space was about 25 feet long by 18 feet wide by 8 feet high. That is roughly the dimensions of a modern-day two-car garage. So the cabin housed the Murphys, the Pikes, the Fosters, and the Eddies. After framing the cabins, the next task was to slaughter most of the surviving oxen. Their hides were going to be used with branches and canvas to roof the cabins. Now, from the minute the oxtails went into the soup kettle, no part of the animal went to waste. Quote, "The cattle were all killed and the meat was placed in the snow for preservation." End quote. Virginia Reed. The frozen meat, like everything along the way, was not community property. Each family was carefully monitoring its own hoard. Hunger drove hard bargains. Quote, "My mother had no cattle to kill, but she made arrangements for some, promising to give two for one in California." End quote. Virginia Reed. The only currency of real value wasn't money. It was dead oxen. Although the immigrants had very little food, they did have an unlimited supply of water. The lake wasn't frozen solid at first, and snow was easily able to be melted in kettles over the fire. There were plenty of trees to chop down for firewood if you could get to them as the snowdrifts grew. The drifts were starting to become taller than the cabins themselves. George and Jacob Donner and their families were not at Truckee Lake. After George's accident, they'd never caught up to the others. They were camped at Alder Creek, which was about 5 or 6 miles back. Margaret Reed probably missed the Donners. Her friends from Springfield might not have had much to share, but maybe they wouldn't have made her bargain and beg like the others did. The grim reality was that the Reeds, like almost everyone else, had only ox meat and flour left to eat. A total of 81 people were trapped at Donner Lake and Alder Creek. 25 men, 15 women, and 41 children. 22 of them would try once more to cross the summit in late November, only to fail and return to the camps. 5 would die of starvation and illness by Christmas. The Breens alone had a decent store of food, but with 7 children in their family, it wouldn't last forever. And Patrick Breen was suffering from a kidney stone, a painful ailment, as he tersely noted in his diary on Christmas Eve, quote, poor prospect, any kind of comfort, spiritual or temporal, end quote. 9 days before Christmas, in fact, the situation was so dire that 15 of the strongest immigrants set off for help. Most of them were young people without children. If they'd had to die, they decided at least they would die trying to get help. Franklin Graves, a native of Vermont, made them snowshoes for the journey. This group then simply called, quote, the snowshoers, end quote, later became known as the Forlorn Hope. Mary Ann Graves, age 20, took part because, quote, the cries of the hunger from my brothers and sisters was more than I could stand, end quote. The snowshoers also included 2 of the party's most determined men, Charles Stanton and William Eddy, as well as Lewis and Salvador, who knew the Sierra Nevada well. Among them, too, was Patrick Dolan, the laughing Irishman who had danced the jig at those happy campfires back on the plains. He wasn't too merry in the days before his departure, as Patty Reed recalled, quote, Mr. Dolan demanded security from my mother for beef which she bought from him, end quote. Margaret Reed had to surrender to Dolan what were perhaps the last 2 mementos of her husband, his pocket watch and Mason's medal. Quote, I was going with them, the snowshoers, and I took sick and could not go, end quote. Virginia Reed later reported, it must have been a moment of wishful bravado. Her mother never would have let her go, and Virginia loved her family too much to leave. With the Forlorn Hope on its way, and James Reed still presumably alive, there were at least 2 faint possibilities for rescue. The Donner families were even worse off than those at the lake, at least physically. Shortly before Christmas, the Reed's teamster, Milt Elliott, had hiked the 5 or 6 miles to Alder Creek to check on the Donners. He found tents that looked like wigwams, probably because the elderly Donner brothers lacked the strength even to build crude cabins. They had simply chopped down some slender tree trunks, propped them against a standing tree trunk, then draped torn canvas and quilts over the frame. The teamsters did the same, snow piled on these tents, almost caving them in. The walls of fabric were always wet, and the people at Alder Creek wore damp clothes, walked in wet shoes, and slept in damp beds. Nothing had a chance to dry. By Christmas, Jacob Donner and 3 of the teamsters were dead. The cut on George's hand had gotten infected, and the infection was eating its way up his arm. Now, the families of the Donner brothers did share what little they had, and it made a difference. Jacob's widow Betsy and George's wife Tamsin were coping well, and their 12 children and stepchildren seemed content, with the girls putting snow into cups and pretending to have tea parties. Even the toddlers made their own amusements. Quote, a little sunbeam strolled down and made a bright spot upon our floor, end quote. Eliza Donner. The daughter of George and Tamsin, Eliza was just 3 years old that winter. Playing with the ray of sun was one of her first memories. Quote, I sat down under it, held it on my lap, passed my hand up and down in its brightness. I gathered up a piece of it in my apron and ran to my mother. Great was my surprise when I carefully opened the folds and found that I had nothing to show. End quote. Eliza Donner. As matters got worse, the Donners were reduced to gnawing on ox bones, burned, brown, and eating some of the few mice that came in camp. Tamsin was a gifted teacher. She turned to the Bible for storytelling and consolation. Eliza would say, quote, "While knitting and sewing, my mother held us children spellbound with wondrous tales of Joseph in Egypt, of Daniel in the lion's den, and of the master who took young children in his arms and blessed them." End quote. Here is the entry from Patrick Breen's diary on Christmas Day. Quote, "Began to snow yesterday about 12 o'clock. Snowed all night and snows yet rapidly. Great difficulty in getting wood. Offered our prayers to God this Christmas morning. The prospect is appalling, but hope in God. Amen." End quote. For the Reed children, Christmas brought a near miracle. Virginia, Patty, Jim, and Tommy stared into the kettle at the best sight they had seen in a long time. Food bubbling in the water. It was real food, not the nauseating broth made from boiled hides of oxen that had become their daily fare. A handful of beans, half a cup of rice, a few dried apple slices may have been a snack once, but they were a feast now. Most exciting of all, there was meat from a secret hiding place. Margaret Reed had produced a square of bacon about the size of the palm of little Jim's hand. She had also saved a bit of tripe, the honeycomb-like stuff that had lined the stomach of one of the slaughtered oxen. Beans, rice, apples, bacon, tripe. These new, luxurious items were simmering in the pot together, sending up a warm, succulent steam that mixed with the dank smells of the cabin. Whenever a morsel of bacon rose to the surface, the children filled the room with cheers. Last Christmas, they'd been in Springfield. Their maid, Eliza Williams, had probably served up a huge roast, bowls of vegetables, hot loaves of bread, and more pies and cakes than anyone could eat. The abundance of food was not the only painful memory. James Reed had been there, of course. Where else would he have been? A father at the head of the family table on Christmas Day? And so had their late grandmother. Yet, this year's meal was also lavish in its own way. Its ingredients could have been stretched into a month's worth of thin soups. But from the very day they were trapped by the snows on November 4th, Margaret had vowed she would give her family some happiness on Christmas. Milt Elliott joined in the celebration. The young man had stuck by the Reeds through the miseries and felt like a part of the family. He even called Margaret Ma. Eliza Williams was on hand too, but she barely functioned as a maid. Her half-brother, Bayless, had just died, and Eliza may have been losing her mind from hunger. In the cold and dirty cabin, lit and heated only by fire, the disheveled group said grace and thought their own thoughts. As she served the stew, Margaret said words she would not say again for a long time. Quote, "Eat slowly, for this day you can have all you wish." End quote. The usual daily fare, soup made from ox hides, was making everyone gag. The recipe was to cut the hides into strips, burn off the hair, then boil down the leathery skin for hours and let it cool. The result was a jelly-like pot of glue that even the adults found hard to swallow. Only the Breens, who needed it least, didn't seem to mind it. People often ask, with great frustration, why the families didn't hunt and fish. They had guns, and no doubt they tried to shoot game, but the only targets seemed to have been mice. If foxes or coyotes passed in the day, they probably moved too quickly to be shot. Deer had migrated to lower elevations. Fishing also proved useless once the lake froze, and the immigrants tried ice fishing but weren't really equipped for it. Early on, as legend has it, William Eddy got a grizzly bear for meat. In the 1980s, archaeologists unearthed burnt grizzly bear bones near the Truckee Lake encampment. But grizzlies and black bears den up for the winter, so they weren't a feasible source of food. In any case, the weather was too cold to spend whole days moving around in the camp, especially as people grew weaker and sicker. Also, the frequent blizzards and the mounting snow made movement just about impossible, even with snowshoes. There were 5 feet of snow on the ground in November and 22 feet by March, which means that the snow rose higher than a two-story building. Quote, the game had left the mountains and the fish in the lake would not bite. End quote. Eliza Donner. Quote, no living thing without wings can get about. End quote. Patrick Breen. The Murphy children actually ate a rug. It was made from some sort of animal skin and was drying out in front of the fire. They discovered by chance that they could break off pieces and toast them. The crispy bites went down more easily than the boiled hides did. Others, in desperation, boiled the leather from their shoes and book covers to eat. Sickening as those hides and bits of leather must have been, the Reeds missed them when they were gone. By New Year's, they had to sacrifice the children's pet, Cash. Apparently, the other four dogs had died along the trail. The cooked body of the little terrier sustained them for a full week. They even boiled down Cash's bones to chew. Quote, we ate his entrails and feet and hide and everything about him, end quote. Virginia later reported. Patty remembered it, too, in her breathless way. Quote, a poor little dog saved us from death of hunger. Dog is good anyway or where. You may try it. Don't doubt me. This is true. End quote. After eating Cash, the Reeds had almost nothing, and Margaret had to make her hardest decision yet. With Milt, Eliza, and Virginia, she would try to cross the mountain. The other children were too small to come along, and so Margaret still hoped to meet her husband on the other side. They set out on January 4th, a spring-like morning, leaving their cabin on a path that was surrounded by such deep snow that it was more like a tunnel. Quote, may God of mercy help them. Tom remains behind with us. Pat with the Kesbergs and James with the Graveses folks. It was difficult for Mrs. Reed to get away from the children. End quote. Patrick Breen. Quote, to keep the little ones from trying to follow, we told them we would bring them bread and then they was willing to stay. End quote. Virginia Reed. Eliza stumbled back to camp the next day. The others returned after four nights on snowshoes. Milt made along the way. Of course, they brought no bread. Their compass had broken. Virginia knew just how lucky they were to be back. Quote, the same night there was the worst storm we had that winter, and if we had not come back that night, we would never got back. End quote. Virginia Reed. The phrase, eating themselves out of house and home, is usually an exaggeration, but for the Reeds, it was a fact. They had to start removing the ox hides from their roof to cook them. Margaret hacked off pieces each day, fighting an impossible battle between hunger and shelter. One day, Elizabeth Graves insisted those hides now belonged to her as payment for the ones Margaret borrowed earlier. Perhaps two women have never hated each other more than these two. They still harbored bad feelings over James Reed's killing of John Schneider, who had been a friend of the Graveses, and possibly Marianne's fiancé. The journey to California had already cost Margaret her home, her mother, all of her worldly goods, and possibly her husband. Had it come to this now? Starved and fighting over ox hides? Apparently so. Quote, the Graves seized on Mrs. Reed's goods until they would be paid. End quote. Patrick Breen wrote this in his diary, noting that Mrs. Graves did leave the Reeds with two hides. These may have been hides from the roof, or perhaps Margaret finally took some that Patrick Dolan or Charles Stanton had left behind. Quote, you may know from these proceedings what our fare is in camp. End quote. Patrick Breen. Breen's diary is mostly notes about the weather and daily conditions, not people, but Mrs. Graves drew a rare personal comment. Quote, she is a case. End quote. Mercifully, the Breens helped the Reeds. Quote, when the hides were taken off our cabin and we were left without shelter, Mrs. Breen gave us a home. End quote. Virginia recalled, the Reeds with Eliza moved into the Breens' cabin. Virginia had come back to the camp on her hands and knees, her feet crippled by frostbite. Her prospects for survival were not good. However, Peggy Breen had also liked the girl, and she risked her husband's fury by slipping her bites of food. Patrick had housed the Reeds. He couldn't feed them, too, but he softened. Quote, Mr. Breen would cook his meat. We used to take the bones, heat them up, boil them, and boil them over and over again. End quote. Virginia Reed. The families made an effort to bury their dead, placing the bodies in the ever-deepening snowdrifts. As teenager John Breen said, quote, death had become so common an event that it was looked upon as a matter of course, and we all expected to go soon. End quote. Now, John and his brother Edward, whose broken leg had mended well, did the burying because they were the strongest. On February 9th, they buried Milt Elliott. Just a few days earlier, Milt had been desperately bargaining on Margaret's behalf for another hide from Lavanna Murphy, with no luck. Now he was gone, and his small supply of food was his last legacy to the family he loved. Virginia helped bury him. Quote, commencing at his feet, I patted the pure white snow down softly until I reached his face. Poor Milt. It was so hard to cover that face from sight forever. For with his death, our best friend was gone. End quote. In body, and especially in spirit, the Reeds were failing. Quote, Mrs. Reed has headache. Mrs. Graves refused to give Mrs. Reed any hides. We all feel very weakly today. End quote. Patrick Breen shared this on February 13th. Soon, people were also breaking down their homes from the inside. They began chopping out pieces of the log cabin walls to stoke their fires. This was because snowdrifts sometimes blew against the door and made it impossible for them to go outside and cut wood. Other times, the men would cut timber, but were unable to lift it when it fell into deep snowdrifts. As time crept on, the sameness of the days was numbing. At the beginning, the family sat and talked so they could, quote, sometimes almost forget oneself for a while, end quote, Virginia Reed. Then sitting became difficult because they had lost all the fat on their bottoms. People would lie motionless for hours to conserve what little energy they had. Also, the strongest, with their seemingly endless supply of food, Patrick and Peggy Breen began to read aloud from their Bible and prayer book. They invited the others to join in, and soon their cabin hummed with readings and prayer. Here was one thing that the Irish Catholic immigrants and the wealthy Illinois Protestants could wholeheartedly share. A cry to God to save them. O Lord, hast thou forsaken me? The cabin was dark. It was lit only by flickering flames. And little 8-year-old Patty Reed loved this ritual of lighting the candles, which were actually just little twigs. And she loved praying. Quote, all of us that were out of bed would kneel to hear and feel, God have mercy. End quote. Patty Reed. Images of angels, devils, and life everlasting captivated Patty to the point where she seemed to go into a trance, which is also consistent with extreme hunger. If her mind was in another place, perhaps she couldn't feel the eternal damp cold and smell the constant odors of the windowless cabin, the sickening steam of bones boiling in the kettle, the wet earthen floor, the unwashed clothes, babies whose cloth diapers were mere shreds. Virginia prayed and watched. Quote, I never think of that cabin but that I can see us all on the ground praying. I can see my mother planning and wondering what else she could do for her children. End quote. Sometimes Virginia would go outside and lie on a blanket in the sun, as they all did. It wasn't much colder in the open, and there was light. She read The Life of Daniel Boone again and again. It seemed miraculous that this particular book was there. Daniel Boone, an early pioneer from Kentucky, had lived among Native Americans. He'd hacked his way through hostile territory, just like the Donner Party, and he had survived. But the plagues of the Bible, which Virginia could also read, seemed closer to their own hardships that winter. Sometime in February, Virginia felt herself slipping away. Quote, we had all gone to bed. I was with my mother and the little ones, all huddled together to keep from freezing. But I could not sleep. It was a fearful night, and I felt that the hour was not far distant when we would go to sleep, never to wake again in this world. All at once, I found myself on my knees with my hands clasped, looking up through the darkness, making a vow that if God would send us relief and let me see my father again, I would be a Catholic. End quote. Now, Virginia revived. Later in the month, John Breen saw something that seemed like a vision. Quote, one evening, as I was gazing around, I saw an Indian coming from the mountain. He came to the cabin and said something which we could not understand. He had a small pack on his back consisting of a fur blanket and about 24 of what is called California soap root. He appeared very friendly, gave us 2 or 3 of the roots, and went on his way. End quote. What was this visitor telling them? How frustrating that no one could talk with him. He must have seemed like a figure from a dream. Louis and Salvador might have spoken his language, but they were away with the forlorn hope, which had now been gone for 2 months. The gift was ironic. Soap plants have roots that can in fact be used like soap, something the immigrants needed, but they are also edible, so the immigrants ate them. They, quote, tastes like sweet potatoes, end quote. Patrick Breen. But the really curious point of the visit is that the Native Americans knew that the immigrants were there. Almost 40 years later, in her book, Life Among the Paiutes, Sarah Winnemucca, the granddaughter of Chief Truckee, the leader for whom the Truckee River was named, told how her tribe quietly kept tabs on the strangers in their area. Quote, those were the last white men that came along that fall. White people perished in the mountains, for it was too late to cross them. We could have saved them, only my people were afraid of them. They must have suffered fearfully. The snow was too deep. End quote. Quote, the Sierra Nevada is rock upon rock, snow upon snow. End quote. As Sarah Winnemucca's people had warned, the first white people who ventured there, despite the small gift of food, the group at Truckee Lake was starving, and though they didn't yet know it, the severity of the mountain had driven their friends and relatives in the forlorn hope to break the final taboo. They had begun to eat their own dead. Thank you for joining me for another episode of The Lives of Women in History. Please consider sharing with your friends and family and leaving a review. You can send me a message at womensettlers@gmail.com, or if you use the Anchor app, you can send me a voicemail. See you next week.